Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Richard Lewis Show. I must apologize for the delay, a little bit tardy here. Was on a phone call, I believe you heard some of it. Working hard. That's how I roll. Sam is here, apparently. How are you doing?
Indeed, I am here.
Good, glad to hear it. Very glad. Look, it's another one of those shows where it's kind of, it's the start of the week. You know, I had time to kind of script a few things, plan a few things out. I'm going to end the show in the same way that we ended the last show, with a sad story.
With a sad cat.
Yeah, with a sad pet story. It's the new thing, I think. It's how we're going to end shows for the foreseeable. So, how have you been, man? I always like doing the shows because I don't talk to you anymore.
I've been grinding my weekends out. Well, I'm done, mate. Finished last week at Gfinity. Did the fucking finals for the Elite Series. Mm-hmm. That's it now, mate. I'm free. I got no on. I plan on laying free in bed for a month.
Yeah, so, you're not because you're going to come out here.
Yeah, but give me a month. I got at least a month of bed. I need at least a fortnight minimum to just bed it up, mate. If
I
was rich, I'd live it. I'd just get a first class flight to Vegas, but you know the beef level, mate. It's going to be a 12-hour flight. Yeah. Screaming children, beefy men.
You want
people getting their feet out, taking their socks off, like absolute fucking disgusting creatures on a plane. Anyone who does that, like that, I hope you get spit on just for doing it, you little freak.
I mean,
if I see your toenail, we're in too deep. Anybody in the world.
I'm just gonna do something here. Let's see how much it is.
What, first class flight?
Yeah.
Probably like $4,000.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's unreasonable as fuck, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm actually looking at one here. Like the first one I clicked on was $21,000.
That's reasonable.
Yeah, maybe you can put up with the feet.
Exactly. So I'll take those 2 weeks of DB.
Yeah, not there yet. We're not there yet. We're doing all right. We're making money, but we ain't making that kind of money. So, All right, then. Let's do a fucking show. Lots of stuff going on in the world. We're playing catch up. I haven't really, been doing them as regularly as we used to. So, let's just start with, Port Talbot, right?
I'm aware.
Yeah, Port Talbot. It's a fucking awful place to live in a lot of ways. I mean,
I like it, mate. You've got a lot more hatred for the place. I like it, mate.
It's quiet. It's not hatred. It's like when you love a place that much, you do see all the fucking flaws, you know. And real talk, like, there isn't a lot to do. I mean, first of all, Port Talbot is the only place in the world where a swimming pool has burnt to the ground, I'm pretty sure. Like, I don't even know how that happened. Else. Nah, come on, mate. It's full of water. How is it burnt down? How is it burnt down? And I did used to like the Bowls Club. Obviously, used to love going down there. £1.10 for a pint of Strongbow, right? Great scenes. Right next to the football ground, where of course Port Talbot play. Great high standard.
I remember when we beat Swansea 2-1, mate. All of us rushed the pitch. Yeah, scored like the 89th minute, mate. Everyone rushed the pitch. Huge.
That was a Strongbow shortage in the town.
There was just too much consumed, mate.
Everyone was wet in the bed that night.
There was a Strongbow farming for 3 days.
But, you know, like real talk, it's just, what's it got now? You know, the fucking steelworks and the fucking fisheries.
Barely, just about.
I was going to say, they ain't what they used to be, are they? You know, like when people are stealing mackerel, right?
When people are fishing and sell my fish to everyone in the shops, mate, that's how I used to get it.
Yeah, fishing.
Yeah,
these people.
Yeah, but they weren't. Oh, yeah, okay. But I was gonna say they ain't cool fish. Like I was selling motherfuckers bream, like 20 roaches, and all those tiny little roach collecting.
Yeah,
20 roach give me £3. Come on, £3.
If I had a time, if I had a pound for every time I was like literally offered mackerel on the street, come on. Think about it, right? Like everywhere else, like Middlesbrough, when I lived in Middlesbrough, got
offered drugs and sex.
Hey, you want some heroin? Nah, you're all right, mate.
How much? If you can go cheaper than this mackerel, I'll get it.
Yeah, exactly. Walking down the street to Port Talbot. Hey, mate. Got something for you. Oh, what's that? You want, opens his fucking coat. You want this mackerel, bro? I do not want to buy illegal street mackerel.
Out of your pockets.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, come the fuck on. Like,
already,
what are we?
Got did that. I had those already.
Yeah. All right, well, if you don't buy it, someone else will. Yeah, sound. I'll let them take it.
Oh, no, don't make me miss out on the mackerel. Where am I going to find them again?
So, how close to the steelworks do you live?
Not a while, but I'm aware of it.
Right, I mean, you know it's got that smell?
Oh, yeah, mate, Margam, where you're at, is Margam's known for that, because I think that's where the breeze goes, that's further away. Yeah, Margam's known for the stinking like shit.
And that's what I wanted to bring up. Like, basically, wherever there's industry, like, it was the same in Middlesbrough. Like, if you went down the old ICI chemical factory, there's some hills. It sort of leads into the foot of the North Yorkshire moors. And it's just one side of the hill is just black. And you're like, oh, is that like heather or an interesting? No, it's pollution. It's just, you know, the opening of Blade Runner was based on Ridley Scott drove through Middlesbrough and drove past the ICI plants and saw just flames shooting into the sky. And he went, fucking hell, imagine if all the world looked like Middlesbrough. Wouldn't that be awful? And that's how he created Blade Runner. So generally where there's industry, there's these awful smells. It's pretty bad. It's not a cool place. And you're right, like Margam Park, you know, you used to go to Margam Park as a kid for that fresh air.
Not fresh stank.
Yeah. Ah, yes, the fresh air.
New lungs will do you good. Breathe that in.
And someone else brings this down. There's a guy called Rival Denty in the chat. And he says, rest in peace, anyone lives in a town with a paper mill. I used to live in Essex, down near Tilbury, where the docks are. And we're going to bring up Tilbury docks later in the show, coincidentally. But I actually lived near a paper mill. And it fucking hums. It's like a hamster cage. It's like being in a hamster cage.
Oh, right. It smells like hay.
Yeah, it's really bad.
What smell is it? Why is that bad, though? I guess you can get annoyed of it, but it's not...
No, mate, it reeks.
It's not standalone really bad.
Yeah. Oh, no, it is. it'll drive you really mental. I used to have to go down there because I used to work in Chafford 100 in a bar that's now closed. That was where I had the job where I had to dress up as a bear because I didn't command enough authority as a bar manager to make anyone else dress up as the bear for the kids' parties. So they'd all be, I'd be like, right, we've got a kids' party coming in today. You've got to dress up as a bear. And everyone would go, fuck off, Rich. And I'd be like, no, look, seriously, come on now. I'm only doing this job part-time. You fucking working full-time, you sad cunt. I'm fucking not dressing up. All right, okay. Guess I'm in the bear costume again. So anyway, the point I'm making about all of this is it fucking stinks, right? I mean, like, parts of Port Talbot really smell. But not as bad as the first story that's going to lead us into our show. This, I can't even imagine this happening. Like, if this happened anywhere, it would be in a place like Port Talbot, I guess. This is in Alabama. A small Alabama town called Parrish, and there was a train that was delivering 10 million pounds of human feces.
Oh, I thought you meant, like, value.
No.
That would be huge. Who's buying that?
Yeah, 10 million pounds. I'll trade it for some mackerel. 10 million pounds of human feces on a train. On a train, and the train's broke down and is stranded in this town. So it's just there. Just 10 million pounds of human shit on a train.
Trains, man? That can't be the best way to transport shit.
Yeah. And you'll notice the headline, God help us if it gets hot. Well, yeah, that'll certainly fucking hum. You're not wrong. It's quite funny. The way they frame it in this news report here is that it goes, look, Parish, Alabama, right now, dozens of trains carrying 10 million pounds of poop are stranded in a rural Alabama rail yard. Technically, it's bio-waste, but to the 982 residents in the small town of Parish, that's just semantics. They want it gone. The load has been there for 2 months.
What? They can't. They just parked it up, mate. Well, leave the shit here, I guess. Yeah.
The driver must be in the union. Done my time, bud. Done my time. I'm off to have a fucking bowl and eat some mackerel
shit,
and that.
Shit's biodegradable. Right. I don't know. I haven't done my research on this one, Rich, but I feel like
pouring
shit into the ocean isn't bad.
So what you're saying is, Sam, if you introduce 10 million pounds of human feces to the ocean, it'd be all right.
Yeah, but, mate, that sounds like a lot. To the ocean, that's newt. That's newt, mate. The fish will eat that. We'll fucking walk it off.
I don't know, mate. I'm going to lean towards...
What's 10 million pounds between friends? Like, between the ocean, there's nothing.
I mean, don't get me wrong. We put far worse shit in the
ocean. Yeah, exactly. I don't think it's not as bad.
But that doesn't make it good. But you know, like, human feces...
I just solved the problem.
No, you haven't solved the problem. It does create, like, dangerous chemicals.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I have done the research, mate. I don't know what bad shit is.
No, it's pretty bad. And keep in mind, it is bio-waste, so it's not just poo. It's all the other stuff that comes out of the sewage system.
Fucking, like, toilet shit, shitbergs.
Yeah.
Fatbergs, they're all in there, mate.
Yeah, so, but anyway, so yeah, you can't just throw 10 million pounds of human shit into the ocean just for
like. Yeah, it's just like one massive composter.
You were the kid that when your mum told you to fucking tidy your room, under the bed! Under the bed!
Put it in the ocean.
Under the bed. Look, I'm going to live there. Into the ocean. It'll all be fine. Won't be fine.
Drop this off at the ocean.
You know, 6 months from now, they're pulling strange fish that looks like a turd with fins discovered. And you're just like,
yeah, fucking, I made that.
Yeah, nice bit of mackerel.
It braided of my shit. Yeah.
So anyway, this is where the news report is like just weird. It goes, to add insult to injury, it isn't even their poop. As if that would in any way make a difference to 10 million pounds of fish. Like, yeah, you're walking past it every day on the way to work. But, well, at least it's ours. You know, no one would give a fuck.
All shit in the world goes to an ocean. Where's shit stored, mate? Is it all just composted? Like, I don't even know how shit is disposed of.
I mean,
exactly. Nobody knows, mate. I reckon it's in the ocean.
But they treat it in sewerage plants.
Yeah, but.
And then it goes somewhere else.
Yeah, but do they treat it, or do they just collect the shit in a fucking train and then leave it in Alabama, mate?
Mate, the shit you're saying, you could get appointed to the fucking Environmental Protection Agency by Donald Trump, the shit you're coming out with.
Global warming, like,
it's great to meet you, Mr. Davis. And what do you think about disposing of human excrement and bio-waste? Stick it in the sea, I say, Trump. Stick it in the See, you're hired. Great, great to have you on board. You're a real great person. It's going to be beautiful. It's going to be huge. Huge shit.
It'll improve their immune system. The fish will take it on chin. Be like vaccine in them. Be fine. Little bit of ammonia and shit to the brain. Ain't doing nobody any harm.
Yeah, all right. you hold that thought up there. You keep that one permeating in your fucking
dragon's den with it. Right.
Anyway, so just to add to the end of this story, this is somebody from the council. I'm just getting little bits and pieces of information, and I cannot tell you how frustrating it is. My understanding is they are really trying to work on the problem, and they keep telling us the situation is almost over.
Lies.
Yeah, they were told it would take 7 to 10 days to move the feces out, but that was over 2 months ago. So it's just there. Just 10 million pounds of shit just chilling in a small town in Alabama, just having a coog.
Is it warm trains?
Now, drugs. We go from shit to the good shit, right? When you get caught with drugs, if you get caught with drugs, I should say, because I'm sure nobody uses drugs, illegal drugs, you know. But if you get caught, generally, it's not worth your while to kind of try and fight it out in through the legal system. The that ain't mine defense sort of rarely stands up. But I saw one. I mean, like, this is just like, I don't know if it's genius or stupidity. It's like, I can never tell. That's one of the things in today's society. I can never tell what's clever or dumb anymore. It's like, just who knows, you know. So this is a story from Fort Pierce. And this woman got caught, supposedly, with cocaine in her purse. And she's come up with a very interesting line of defense, which, you know, perhaps, Sam, you're younger than me. You might be able to give some insight into whether or not this type of defense would work. The woman said that, well, after she was stopped, because police officers said they smelled marijuana, and then they searched the car, and they found marijuana and cocaine in separate bags in her purse. So when authorities asked her, what are you doing with these drugs? She said, it's a windy day. The cocaine must have flown through the window and landed in my purse as you were searching for it.
Not bad. Don't think that one's going to work.
Obviously, cocaine possession, felony, marijuana possession, a misdemeanor. She takes ownership for the marijuana. But the cocaine, she is insistent, just blew in through the window. I don't know, Sam. It's a bold strategy, Cotton. I don't know.
It's always in Florida, this shit, man. It's always someone in Florida.
I just love the last sentence of the write-up as well. It wasn't immediately known if she has a lawyer. I'm going to wager she doesn't. Purely on the basis she is saying that a bag of cocaine was traveling on the wind like in American Beauty, like just caught in an updraft, like flew through her window, coincidentally at the time she was being searched for possession of other drugs and landed in her purse. I'm going to say probably not. Probably no lawyer would instruct her to enter that as a defense. But it's all right, though. Because it's not just people on the street that come up with mad bullshit excuses for when drugs go missing. The police do it too, Sam. Now, I'm sure if you've ever watched any of the great police dramas out there, it always involves corrupt police. And one of the things that corrupt police like to do in those dramas, for example, think The Shield. They mainly do it with money, I suppose. But, you know, you get the point. It's pocket the drugs and sell them to dealers that they know to make some money on the side. Now, obviously, nothing like that would ever happen in real life because police are incorruptible. But when drugs go missing, you know, it does beg the question, where did they go? So these police were super unfortunate, Sam. Really unfortunate. This is a story, and it's on the BBC website, so people can go and check it out. Hang on, here it is. So, Argentina. Police officers have been fired because there was over a pound of marijuana just went missing from the police warehouse. And when these police were asked, where did all the marijuana go? They said that it was eaten by mice.
How do they know that? I seen them do it. I watched them eat a whole pound of it.
Now, mice do eat anything. But
yeah, wasn't it like Pablo Escobar used to lose like 10 mil a day or something to mice eating his money? I'm sure that's a random fact of it.
Yeah, mice. And I'm sure all those mice
like,
ended up
getting to it.
Yeah. ended up beheaded and buried in fucking shallow graves all around the Colombian jungle, Sam. Yes, I'm sure those mice definitely had their fair share. But forensic experts were called in after the police sort of entered this defense of saying, well, the mice must have ate it because, you know, what else would happen to over a pound of marijuana? In fact, no, sorry, I've got that wrong. It's not even a pound. It's a thousand. Yeah, it's a ton. It's over 1,000 pounds of marijuana.
540 kilograms. Yeah. Jesus!
Sorry, I thought that was a decimal point.
It's a lot of quiche, man.
Yeah, it is. So 1,000 pounds of marijuana. My bad. We can edit that in post. Now, forensic experts were called in, and they said that if the mice had eaten that much marijuana, they would all be dead. They would all be dead.
Yeah.
Because obviously that much marijuana would cause marijuana toxicity. So anyway, they decided that the mice defense didn't really hold up under scrutiny. And they now that it can't be accounted for, the 8 police officers that were supposedly presiding over the marijuana in the warehouse have gone. They've been fired. So somehow I think they're going to have a nice little retirement fund.
Yeah. Right? Big chunk of cash for that bit. Nice cheese.
I love as well the photo of the mice. It's like you can tell, like, the journalist who had to write this story up was like, oh, can we just get a picture of some mice? And it's just like three just nice mice, not doing anything.
Looks like they're living in bread. Yeah, they're living in bread roll.
Living in the bread. It's just living inside the bread roll. In
right? What kind of mad Disney film is this?
Yeah, mad, isn't it, right? And they've just put underneath, experts said mice would die if they ate marijuana. Good, good. High-level reporting. What else has been going on? This is a horrible story. I deliberately put this one in the middle.
Take the edge off.
Well, yeah, then we could just have it either side. Do you know what I mean? Just have it either side of some, ha, 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 that's pretty funny. That's funny. Because this isn't funny. This is, I don't even know how something like this can happen. So, hospital, Sam. You been to hospital recently? Yeah, like in recent memory?
Really. A few years, sure.
Tell me about the time you were in hospital, Sam.
My appendix exploded, mate. Well, yeah, it bred.
You look like a man who would have had an exploding appendix.
I mean, it doesn't matter how healthy you are, I think, mate. Fucking digest grass, doesn't it?
I don't know.
Exactly. Just decided to have a blow in it.
It's peritonitis is dangerous, of course, because when your appendix ruptures, it leaks toxic stuff into the blood and it can cause septicemia. It's very dangerous. So what happened? They just carve you open like a Christmas turkey and whip that bad boy out?
Nah, because the NHS are a bit gash, aren't they? So I went there when it wasn't exploded and then sat on a fucking bed for about 30 hours until I finally got surgery. By that time, it had exploded. So they were going to do a keyhole surgery. Then they had to cut me open because apparently if they had left all that toxic shit in there, I probably would have died. But the doctor said, oh, yeah, we went in there with the keyhole. We just saw that it was all black and exploded. I was like, yeah, well, sound, that's probably what's going to happen. You're going to leave me rot on the floor. So, yeah, it was rough. I had to stay in for a couple of extra days. Usually it's a pretty easy operation. You go in, they do it through a little hole, you leave day after. Nah, mate, shit was rough.
Yeah. Good old NHS. Yeah. Well, I'm glad you had a bad experience with the NHS. Glad you had a bad experience because this is going to put it into perspective, Sam. Because I've had not great experience with the NHS as well. Obviously, regulars on the show know that I had my fingers chopped off and I had them surgically reattached and rebuilt. And I went to a hospital in Swansea for that, Morriston Hospital, which just so happens to be a legendary hospital for that type of procedure, the reattachment of limbs and body parts. And I was in that hospital and had my surgery. And because I refused to go under and have general anesthesia, because I don't like it, they were really upset and pissy with me. I've told you this before, but like the dot, I had my hand over here and I had an injection into the nerve in my armpit, which was very painful to kill all feeling in the arm. And I had it up and they had a little tent around my hand while they worked on it and then rebuilt it. And the doctor, who was clearly pissed off that I hadn't had general anesthesia, was saying like, oh, so what do you do? And I was like, oh, I do this for a living. And he went, yeah, but what do you do for hobbies? And I was like, oh, you know, play guitar. And he was like, not anymore. So classic British bedside manner. And then I was in hospital for a few days and they didn't give me the good in terms of painkillers. I only got morphine once while I was in there. I had a skin graft. They taped my hand up on a spike, I guess. I don't even know what the fuck they were doing. And I was lying down in bed with my hand, which with the wound in my fingers was bleeding for days while the skin graft took. And I was like, get woke up with the blood like dripping on my fucking forehead. Like I couldn't sit right. And across from me, there was a guy who'd had a really bad accident, big fat guy who used to fart in the middle of the night. And I used to have to listen to him like unreally loud. Like, you know what it's like in a hospital ward, like six people in a ward. And this huge fat fucker in the bed across from me was doing these. I've never had nothing like it, mate. It was like the guy from Police Academy, Motormouth Jones. You know when he would like make the fart noises whenever fucking the guy would bend over. It was so loud, like ripping cloth, like it was unreal.
Not asked. I'm old and I'm ill. I'm not asked.
Right, but anyway, he was in hospital because he'd lost all his fingers. Oof. All of them, all the fingers. He apparently had been working on a bandsaw,
yeah,
and he was doing the old, he's pushing the wood in, and the bandsaw snapped, and it went, wow, 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 and like as it came round, like something out of Final Destination, it just lashed all his fingers off.
Great.
Like, yeah, so they managed to save some of the fingers, but not all of them.
Imagine how much of a nightmare. You couldn't even pick them back up.
Stumping them together. I tell you what, like, he couldn't pick them up, but he could hit your fucking lip in hospital, couldn't he? So anyway, so he couldn't pick them up. It was like bad, you know, they had to stop the bleeding and stuff. And he'd lost a lot of his palms as well. He'd lost his palms even.
Oof, he couldn't even stump them up.
Yeah. So he was in the hospital, and what they had to do, and it was several procedures. This is how good a hospital Morriston Hospital is for this kind of thing. Again, getting the drugs, the bedside manner, all of that sucks ass. But if you ever need something sewing back on, they can sew an hand, right? They rebuilt his palms by taking two flaps of flesh from his ass,
right.
Right, they literally just cut chunks of his ass out. They were the palms. Then they sewed back on. I think they got two of the fingers on each hand that they picked up that they could use
not
again.
Ideal.
No, the rest of the fingers went in the bin. And then what they did was, so now he had like two fingers and a thumb on each hand, so he could fucking do a wicked rock lock with. He's upgraded. He can do a rock lock like no one else. But then what they did was, after that, they then went and took his toes.
Don't take a man's toes.
They turned his toes into short, fingers. So he had like, no, but he had half a finger.
Like, yeah. I get what you mean.
No. They put the toes into the ass. and then they joined up the tendons through mate, it was mental. It was like the most mad thing I've ever seen.
So, mate,
he was telling me all about it.
So his fingers are about inch long each.
Yeah, no, they're all just different lengths. But think, he ain't gonna play piano, Sam. He ain't gonna play piano, right? But
I'd say, you know what? Just leave the toes alone, boys.
What? So
what am I gonna have?
You're happy with that?
Yeah, what am I gonna have? Mismatched hands. You can't grip nothing with half an hand and half a toe. Mm. What's that? How's that gonna help you, mate? So you got one. So you got two fingers that are 4 inches long, and you got two fingers which are 1 inch long. What the fuck am I gonna
mate,
do with that?
Put it this way, right? When he was across from me, holding his newspaper. was all right, mate. He looked good.
How though? Look. How can you get? I don't. So he's got half. I don't get how this works.
There you go. See, people are googling it. But it's legit.
But are they the same length? Like, how big is the length difference between toe and finger?
Like, oh, again, obviously it was a bit higgledy-piggledy, you know? It weren't fucking, it weren't, I don't know what you want, like, you know. That, to me, is amazing, Sam, and you're going, yeah, good job turning them toes into fingers, but they're a bit short, aren't they? Yeah, exactly. He's got his fucking hands back, mate. You know what I mean?
You know, he's got his feet back in place. People
legit think I'm making this up. I swear this is true, by the way. This isn't, I'm not going somewhere with this. This is just a real thing that I really observed in Morriston Hospital.
Fucking toes. So, arse
for hands and toes for fingers. He just did it.
Fair dues.
And like, he could wiggle them and move them and that, but he had to have loads of physical therapy and stuff. There you go. See, look, people in the chat, they couldn't save my dad's thumb.
Yeah, big toe. So I've seen. Big toe. I know people who've got big toes for thumbs, because look at this. Pretty
what
similar,
mean, you know,
mate.
People?
Reasonable. Yeah, I know someone with a fucking big toe,
mate,
for thumbs.
What is similar?
Look at
about
who thumb, and then look at who fucking big toe, but it ain't all. It's a thick, big. It's a thick thumb, like it's a big man thumb, but it's still a thumbish.
Man.
It's thumbish, mate.
It's a big man thumb. You're mental.
Yeah, you just trim some of the fat off, mate. You grind down some of the bone, and I bet you'll slide that thumb straight in. Take
so,
a disc at
the sorry. Middle toe being the middle finger, that's too crazy for you, but big man thumb.
Because the size difference, mate, a thumb and a big toe ain't too far apart. A fucking, a little toe, my fucking ring finger, come on.
Anyway, the point that I was saying was that, you know, the NHS, it's not great. It's not great. It's not ideal, but it's got nothing on this, Sam. It's got nothing on this story. It is truly horrifying. We've had some fun. This just ends the fun now. It's going to be hard to come back from this. This story is so fucking bad. This is from Russia, all right? Really put me off the idea of ever going to Russia just in case I got ill. So a woman died in hospital after she was given a drip. Right, because she had been ill and was in hospital and just needed a drip putting in, right, you know, to keep her hydrated or whatever. But the problem was they didn't put in a saline drip. Okay, they put a formaldehyde drip.
Sorry, how are they even kept on the same shelf?
I do not know. I also don't know why you wouldn't just fucking read the bag. Where if you've ever worked in hospitals, because, you know, people are tired. Everything's clearly fucking labeled. Obviously. So this 27-year-old woman who was just having routine surgery was basically embalmed alive.
Jesus.
And yeah, obviously, if you put formaldehyde into your body while you're alive, it basically, you just die of horrendous organ failure.
Blunder, of course.
Oh, just the worst medical blunder. And not even a quick death. It's not like you go, fucking hell, that's not, and then you're out. She was just in massive pain, having seizures and everything for like 2 days, and then just went into a coma. So, just saying. You know, puts fucking Barry Arsands and all that into perspective, doesn't it? Puts your 30 hours. Black appendix nightmare, isn't it? At least they didn't go, hey, go, Mr. Davis.
Oh, no, I got the good, mate. They filled me off. I think I was screaming. I felt it explode, mate, laying on a bed. I thought I was dead. They just gave me that good. And then all of a sudden, 3 days melted into half an hour.
it sure does. Heroin, pretty good for time, isn't it, really? It's a good time management drug. But yeah, like, just one of the worst. That was just an awful story. You know, I mean, not the most awful story, but not far off. But it's all right. I can bring us back to the light. I can bring us back to the light with another ridiculous medical story. Keep it thematically, you know, it's certainly going to cheer people up. This is reported in Men's Health. And this is a guy who was in hospital. And this guy claims he had an itch in his penis.
Right.
So he had. I've never had that. I don't. No, have you ever had an itch in? I've never. Apart from that one time I got thrush, I never even had an itchy bell end. Really, I got thrush once.
Got thrush once.
But never had an itch in the penis. And it just doesn't, like, isn't there a thing where it's like you've got to have, like, it doesn't have to be like dermis or something? I don't know, because I think this guy's just straight lying. I don't think you ever get an itch in your
penis. I definitely know what's happened, 100%.
Right. So, just saying. But I might be wrong. But anyway, this guy claimed. Hilariously, this was reported in a publication called Canker News. Yeah, but this is a Chinese dude who said he had an itch inside his penis, which apparently can be caused by something called prostatitis. I imagine it's like an inflammation in the urethra caused by perhaps something going on with the prostate. It's a thing, apparently. And the guy was so itchy, he decided to push a charging cable from like a fucking iPhone.
How did he even get the big part in?
I don't know, man. He's pushed a meter long iPhone charger cable down his fucking hog's eye. All the way to
he's
get
gone
this
fishing
itch.
For notes. He's you gone for some... a nice fishing, mate.
You want some mackerel?
What? Imagine if when the doctors pulled it out, there was just a mackerel attached. Oh, wanna buy that off me, boy? Four quid. They'll give you that little jetpack.
Oh, what's he doing with them? Why wouldn't you just think, right, before you reach for the cable, hang on, I can just go to the doctors, can't I?
Yeah, but that's not... Obviously, he's into this shit, isn't he, mate?
Just put some cream down there or something, you know?
Oh, right? Need something thinner than a fucking iPhone cable. Why didn't you start off with some fishing wire first?
I've never had an itch that bad. Like, you know what I mean? I'll just leave that. Like, I'll just put the telly on, try and ignore it. Like, it's just mental. Like, you know when you get an itchy back and you're like, ah, oh, eventually you do just, I'll just ride this out. Like, I can't reach. It's right in the middle. I can't get it. Like, I live alone. I'm miserable. No woman to scratch my back. You know, just fuck it. Like, I'll just ride it out. I don't reach for the cable and start pushing things into myself. But anyway, so the guy put it in. But then what happened was he pushed it in so far. This story's pretty horrendous, actually. Thinking about it, if we weren't banned before, this is the one. This is it. Like, see, yeah, I'm off on a 48-hour Greek God style vacation.
Why right? Would it be plugged into an app? What's
that? It's good, isn't it? No, that was actually.
Should have put it in a banana.
Pulled out.
Like,
good thought. But anyway. He pushed it so far in, it got tangled up in his bladder.
Oh, you silly boy.
Like, because I will say this. What the fuck is up with wire, by the way?
It even got tangled there.
But that's what I mean. Like, when you're at the airport and you have your headphones and you just think, right, I'll just put them in my pocket. And you put it in your pocket.
Tied in the 7,000 knots.
Yeah, and then, right? I'm on the plane now. I'll just put fucking out. And you spend half the flight trying to untangle it. So this wire is just mental. It's just its own thing. And it got tangled up in his bladder. And then when he tried to pull it out, there was a knot in the way. And he's like,
oh, no.
Story's outrageous. And he couldn't get it out.
Imagine the amount of regret when he pulled it. He's like,
Oh, no.
I'm going to have to go to the doctor. what it was like, my knob was itching, but like the inside of my knob where the bladder is.
Yeah, the doctor was examining him and he was like, oh, you got an Android.
You got a power bank, mate. I need to get a charge. Come on, low percent. Imagine if he pulled the front out and it was a cable part and he just plugged his phone in to see if it works. While we're there, do a little experiment. Putting, oh, look, the electricity does come from the body, yeah. Look. If you get it from a potato, but yeah. You get it from a human, surely. Plug him in. Or what if the USBN came out first and he plugged him in to fuck him up? Shocking him.
Yeah, I was nearly straight bullfrogging there, that fucking... Yeah, that's just... I thought that was going to be a funny story. That's awful. That's just fucking awful. Like, Christ. Oh, I don't even have my lunch anymore. There you go. This'll fucking cheer you up. Now we're coming back to some real funny things. Some palate cleansers. All right, we're back. Okay.
Toby the cat dies.
Yeah. A man in China had an itchy urethra and he pushed a cat down there and the cat died.
The cat's been looking at him inside of his intestines ever since, trying to walk back home.
Right, so Uganda, right? Uganda's a country very close to my heart. Knew some Ugandan people, like, you know, they were neighbors of mine when I was a kid, and very interested in the history of Uganda, or, you know, read extensively about Idi Amin even before Forrest Whitaker did that film, The Last King of Scotland, you know, one of the maddest dictators of all time, you know, just a fascinating story. That has obviously very horrific repercussions for a country that was, again, part of sort of the British Commonwealth. And when we pulled out, when the British pulled out from it, you know, that's what led to this dictator getting into power, and tribal politics resurfaced, and the country has never really sort of recovered from that. But we're not going to talk about the serious geopolitical situation in Uganda, because I said this was going to be funny. So they've got a president now in Uganda, called President Yoweri Museveni, and he likes to just make these sort of crazy statements from time to time. In particular, like a lot of African politicians, he is very fastidiously obsessed with people's sex lives. And yeah, you know how it is. They're always talking. I mean, like, we've all seen the video, Eat the Poo Poo.
Oh, that's what I was about to say. Eat the Poo.
Yeah, don't do the voice. yeah, you know, it's one of those things, because, you know, very Christian countries, a lot of them, they've got very sort of outdated ideas towards sex and sexual congress and heterosexuality being the, you know, God's chosen form, you know, all of that stuff. But what the president has come out and said publicly now is that he wants to ban oral sex. Right? And this guy... No, and here's the thing. If you think he's not going to do it, I think it was it this year or last year, he made it illegal that if you know someone is gay and you don't tell the police that they're gay, you go to jail. So this guy is wild. This guy is a wild motherfucker. But yes, he wants to ban oral sex. He issued a warning. And when asked why would you want to ban oral sex? He said, the mouth is for eating. That's what we're doing.
Oh, I think, mate, this one says, in 2014, he said that performing oral sex would cause people to get worms.
I was getting there.
But...
He tried. He tried to sow disinformation first. Like, if you perform oral sex on it, you're going to get worms. That's like what your mother says. If you play in the dirt, you get worms. If you don't wash your hands, you get worms.
You look at the TV, you suck your eyes knob, go square.
Yeah, exactly. You suck a knob, you'll get worms. So, yeah, he literally fucking said you're going to get worms. And then when people were still sucking each other off and eating pussy till their hearts content, he's now saying that we might have to ban it. He says here, this is what's mad. So the full quote was, here, look, let me take this opportunity. This was a press conference, by the way. It was just nothing to do with this. It was just at a general press conference to talk about policy. And he just went, oh, hey, journalists, this is the quote. Let me take this opportunity to warn our people publicly about the wrong practices indulged in and promoted by some of the outsiders. The idea that if you're a sort of a real Ugandan, you would never perform oral sex unless you had been corrupted by somebody who wasn't a Ugandan. One of them, back to the quote, one of them is what they call oral sex. The mouth is for eating, not for sex. We know the address of sex. We know where sex is. So, yeah, pretty crazy. And just to give you the full quote on what he said about worms, Sam, because I know you'll appreciate this one. He said, if you push the mouth there, you... Please. All right. You push the mouth there, you can come back with worms and they enter your stomach because that is the wrong address. yeah. Yeah, and I know you're just watching the video of everyone having a fight in the Ugandan parliament. Don't give a fuck, man.
Didn't even play it. They're just auto-playing that shit. Straight dicks. Yeah. Yeah, chest being thrown fucking WWE style.
Yeah. To be fair, though, I know people will be like, haha, Ugandan parliament. This has happened in Italy, Greece, France, I think, even, so. So there you go. But yeah, this is what I mean. This is why I love Uganda, you know? Like, we've talked a lot about, like, it's such an interesting place, and it's like, the people, they're, when we talk, like, about Western countries, when we talk about our corrupt politicians and their disgraceful behavior and the thing, it's nothing compared to what the people in Africa have got to put up with. It is fucking outrageous, Sam. He's trying to ban oral sex, mate. He's trying to ban oral sex. After saying it gives you worms.
Why worms? Why would everyone be scared of worms?
No, but worms is a straight killer in underdeveloped countries, obviously. It's still a scary thing in countries where... Come on, we've all been on fucking rotten.com back in the day. We've all seen the operations. Where it just looks like someone's fucking about to make a delicious chow mein, don't it?
Wimes.
Yeah, wimes. So there you go. So they're pushing for the ban of oral sex. And that's pretty stupid. You know what else is stupid, Sam? Anti-vaxxers. I had a guy message me on Twitter the other day, and I can't remember his name. And obviously, I get a lot of tweets every day, despite apparently having everyone blocked on Twitter ever. But I still get a lot of tweets. And we talked on a previous show about, like, how for years, like, my generation was kind of lied to about nutrition and how a keto diet had been making me feel very good and it fixed some of my, you know, health problems. And basically it was sugar and carbs that were the issue and not kind of fats and meats. And actually, I recently had a medical. My cholesterol's lower than it has been for ages. And I've just been, you know, when I did that ridiculous 8 to 10 week stint of keto where I was just eating fatty foods. Again, none of this sort of syncs up with the knowledge, right? So because I'd said that, somebody sent me the message saying, now you will be willing to accept that vaccines cause autism.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
And I was like, kind of thing. I didn't even bother replying. Like, you just got to let that one go. You'll never win with an anti.
Guarantee he's the kind of guy to keep tweeting, though.
But quite possibly. Because and his justification was... no, and people are saying it must have been a joke, and it's, it wasn't a troll, because the guy had also done a YouTube comment where he expanded on it, where he's basically saying, you know, like, they put this chemical in the vaccines, and that chemical causes this, and therefore that's what causes the autism, and if they're going to lie to you about something as simple as food, then obviously they would lie to you about vaccines. And I was just like, yeah, I'm not going to reply to this guy. You shouldn't argue with anti-vaxxers. Unfortunately, now again, despite there being absolutely no credible science, it's weird how the anti-vaccine movement has sort of took hold, especially in the American landscape. You know, we've done stuff on the podcast about it before, where dear people having to come out and say, stop feeding your children bleach, it will not cure their autism. You know, like, people are, this specter of autism and what causes it and this ignorance has led to some pretty fucking heinous shit going on. So anti-vax stuff is fucking crazy, but I didn't think it could get sort of any more absurd. And then I saw this story. This was reported in the Telegraph, where the British, because obviously it's now everything America does, Britain has to emulate, just in a worse and more stupid way, because Britain is a fucking meme, which we're going to talk about later in the show. The British Veterinary Association noticed that there was an anti-vaccine movement among pets. People were saying, don't give your pets vaccines, and in particular dogs. And they saw such a spike in dogs dying from, you know, treatable illnesses, that if they had a vaccine, right, the dog would have been perfectly fine. So they had to put a statement out telling people dogs cannot get autism. There it is. Dogs cannot get autism. They can't. They're dogs. I'll just read you the statement, mate. We are aware of an increase in anti-vaccination pet owners in the United States who have voiced concerns that the vaccinations may lead to their dogs developing autism-like behavior. Right. Have you ever been around a dog? They're all autistic, aren't they? I mean, like, if you judge it by human standards, like, they're dogs. Like, they're just dogs. That's just how dogs behave. Right, they've all got little weird personalities and idiosyncrasies. It's why dogs are man's best friend. They're like a kind of super loyal and loving, obedient version of ourselves. Like, you know, like basically, if we were stripped of all of our selfishness and ego, we'd behave like dogs, probably. Oh, and it's kind of weird because, sure, dogs do have a concept of shame. William Burroughs once famously said, "The only other animal in the world, apart from mankind, that has a sense of shame is the dog." Like, you know what it's like if you come home and your dog's fucked up
shit
your couch.
On a carpet.
They won't look you in the eye. They won't look you in the eye. Like, fuck yeah, I did do that shit. I did do the bad thing. You know, cats are, yeah. Fucking yeah. Yeah. I'm going to fucking wait till you find that fucking dead mouse I left you upstairs as well. You cunt. You know, you don't give a fuck, do you? To be fair, the mouse was eating your weed, so.
Shamed you, really. You owe me a 10-pack.
But you know, just imagine the world we live in where people are now worried about autism in dogs. It's like, yep, I'll let my dog get fucking heartworms and die in agony. At least my dog's not autistic.
Oh,
like,
that dog got the worms, mate. Telling you, anyone whose dog gets worms, you got to keep an eye on them now.
Yeah, well, let's be real. They do like to have a lick down there, don't they?
Exactly, mate.
But yeah, the statement is that there is currently no scientific evidence to suggest autism in dogs or a link between vaccination and autism. All medicines have potential side effects, but in the case of vaccines, these are incredibly rare, and the benefits of vaccination in protecting against disease far outweigh the potential of an adverse reaction. People are now harming their pets because they're worried about their pets getting autistic, getting the autism. So crazy, crazy stuff. Right, okay, that's the news. That was all the news. Now we're going to do our bits, you know, and then we're going to wrap up the show with a sad story about a sad pet-related story, and then we're going to bail. So I just called this segment Games Journalism is Still Retarded. Now, I don't know if a lot of you kind of even bother with games journalism anymore. I wouldn't blame you if you didn't, because games journalism is a medium that is kind of like, it's just, you know, it's just like a cancer, an aggressive cancer got into games journalism. And I don't know if the cancer was the metaphorical cancer was in the form of people or ideas or a type of practice. I don't know what the root cause was, but it just ate games journalism from the inside out. Just ate it from the inside out. When I was growing up, Sam, and I remember I'm old, so I had the first ever home computers. I had a Spectrum 48K with rubber keys, where you loaded games off a cassette from a separate cassette deck you had to plug in, and it took 3 minutes to load your game, and it could crash at any time while loading, and you'd have to start over again.
Some shit.
Now, you, brilliant. Some of the best games ever made.
That's just nostalgia, mate. You know it ain't true. If you went
no, and played actually, it right now, actually, fucking it. I would urge anybody who thinks it's just nostalgia to go out and play games like Chaos, Laser Squad, Rebel Star, Raiders by Julian Gollop. They are turn-based strategy games that completely hold up. And in fact, Chaos, made in 1984, if I remember correctly, is basically the first ever MOBA. That's how fucking ahead of its time it was. So go check that game out. I've written about it many times. It's one of the most influential games of all time. It's amazing. I still play that game now. They recently made a remake on Steam. I still fire up my Spectrum emulator to play the original Chaos. It's that good a game.
Fucking nerd. Everyone make fun of him, boys.
Make fun of the dead.
Wee, nerd.
It's just a shame you don't have two appendixes, you cunt.
I don't care, I want to cut them both up at the same time. Waste of a fucking organ.
So it's not nostalgia, but I grew up with these things, and I remember getting magazines, and you used to have magazines, and back in, you know, you would get Crash, Your Sinclair, and you get free cassettes on there, and it would be demos, and the reviews would just not be politically charged in any way. They would still discuss games as an art form. Of course they would, because games are an art form. Like any creation that's designed for entertainment, you can look at it on a textual level and analyze it. No art is created in a vacuum. Obviously, the culture surrounding the creation of art is almost as important as the art itself. It will inform the art, be it consciously or subconsciously. So I definitely think there's value in that level of critique. But primarily, what games journalism was for was to give you reviews, to tell you, is the game compatible with this type of hardware, or how will it perform on this system, and things like that. And it had a practical application, a practical use. It was very consumer-driven, and the game developers and game publishers kind of knew we actually sort of need these publications to get our message across, and they would send out things to the publications kind of free. There was never any notion of quid pro quo. There was never, you know, there was never allegations in like the fucking late 80s, early 90s of these like games magazines, you know, like Computer and Video Games, another legendary publication. There's never any allegations that these people were like taking bribes or were in bed with the developers. And it was reflected in the reviews. Like some games that were highly anticipated would be absolutely just ruined if they weren't good enough. And it would be very often as well, you would see highly conflicting reviews. You know, it would be like, this magazine will give something 80. This magazine will give something 40 out of 100. You'd be like, well, you know, this, and then you'd have to read the reviews and kind of get into the mind of the reviewer. It's very rare this happens anymore. You can pretty much tell when a game is going to get a flurry of good reviews based on how much press they've done with the mainstream publications. And these days, everything gets 70 or more, right? I mean, you've got to be a real piece of shit to get less than 7 out of 10 or 70%. You got to be an, you got to be basically not fit for purpose. I've seen, or of course, now more than ever, just have the wrong politics. This RimWorld is an incredible feat of open world sandbox gaming. But we're not going to write about that. Instead, we're going to write about how Tyne and Sylvester hates gay people because there's a type of code in the game, which even though it reflects the statistics for lesbian relationships and bisexuality, he admitted that actually it was just an algorithmic error. But we're just going to write about it and say he hates gays because why not? You know, this is the type of thing they do now. And rapidly, games journalism has just become so divorced from its initial purpose, where it's like 90% talking about politics, 90% talking about high-level critique and feminist theory and all this other stuff. And it's like, what gamers really want to know is the game good? And can I trust your opinion that it's good? Will it perform on my machine? Do you know what I mean? Like, these are the essential questions that just never get answered anymore. Because games journalism is now infested with aspiring political columnists. And it's just a shame. But it's getting to levels now where it's like, it only serves to basically kind of keep a bunch of failed hacks in work. Like, they clearly don't like games. They say they do, but they don't. It's evident in the derision they treat their audience with, because if you identify as a gamer, how do you hate gamers? And I see this a lot from like these games journalists. They always say, hey, I'm a gamer too. And then you'll like look at their Twitter feeds and they'll be like, oh God, who look at these gamers. And sort of, hang on, you're a gamer. What are we saying here? Is there one homogenous type of person called a gamer? Because you're saying, when you can gain kudos, you're saying that it applies to you. But when you want to deride somebody, you're saying it only applies to them. You use it as a term to give you credibility in the space, but simultaneously insult people for being the thing you're masquerading as. These games journalists, it's like, somewhere along the line, to save money, non-qualified writers from the blogosphere just got picked up by these publications because they'd work for peanuts, because they're like, hey, this is a cool industry. Then 3 months in, they realize working in a cool industry when your work is empty, meaningless, and you would aspire for better things, you've got to have a very particular type of resilience for that. I know. Many a day I woke up going, oh, I'm writing about esports again. Oh God, I'm better than this. I'm so much better than this. But then you realize, wait a fucking minute, what kind of mad narcissistic head trip am I on? Why not just take pride in my work? No one's forcing me to be in esports. I'm here because I want to be here. So who the fuck am I angry at? If I want to go do something else, go fucking do it. And once I got into that mindset, I stopped crying so much about how shit esports is to work in. You know, you'll notice a very radical shift. Once I got into that positive mindset, actually, my career went on a much better trajectory. And I got to do cooler stuff, and I'm a lot happier with myself and what I do. These people are just miserable, bitter, self-loathing machines. It's just really sad. But I saw this unbelievable story, and I talked about it the other day with the Overwatch situation, but we're going to get into depth with this. So there was a gaming kind of conference, right, where... you know, developers were showing off the latest games, all right? It was at PAX. And what happened was this female journalist called, let me just get her name so I get it correct. Amanda, I think it's pronounced Farrow, I want to say. Let me just see. Amanda Farrow. was at there and trying out games. And again, you can always spot these people. They try and mask their self-loathing and victim complexes, because their Twitter feed is just filled with, look at me at the place doing the thing. Look at the free swag. It's like, it's the most tedious, generic, shit like that you should really grow out of like 1 month into the job. Yeah, you go to an expo, you get a free fucking t-shirt. It's called marketing. You know, whoopty fucking shit. Right? And they always brag about it and take pictures of themselves. Like, look at me, yeah. Plebeians.
People always do like, oh, yeah, jumping on a plane again. Yeah. Super busy this month. Flying again. Like, fucking nobody cares that you are on a plane. Please stop telling everyone in the world.
I started reviewing games in 1999. And I did it professionally. Let me tell you, who are you trying to fool with that timeline? Who are you trying to kid? It's yourself, isn't it? Because the only people who would think that your job is great, it's not you. We know it isn't you. You make it self-evident that you only go to these things to find something to moan about, to sustain you until you find the next thing to moan about. Whatever it is, it's the only reason you hang in there for these little moments of victimhood. Because you hate games, you hate gamers, you hate the industry, you hate developers, you hate your audience. You're not happy. You should just quit, honestly. That would be my advice to 90% of these games journalists. Just throw in the towel, retrain, or in most cases, go and train as a journalist. And just, you know, go fucking lead a happier life. They don't do that because they live for this. So Amanda Farrow went to PAX and was, you know, haha, look at me with the games and the t-shirts and the fun. And then she went to try an FPS game. And she'd already been talking about how she was a good gamer, you know, like she was like, and how surprised people are that a girl can play games, you know, like just kind of absurd generalizations. Like, I mean, I think we're so far into just gaming culture. The idea that anybody is surprised that a woman can play game. Is anybody actually surprised anymore that women play? I'm just not. Like, I think almost every sort of measurement that's come out is like 40%, 50% of all gamers are female. Like, go figure. It's almost as if the medium has become so popular now, everybody does it regardless. They always try and frame it like it's a big deal. It just isn't a big deal. Like, you just play games, and yeah, women play games. Of course they do. So here was the tweet in question, Sam, that she put out. You know, she says, a life-affirming moment at PAX East. Devs are legitimately shocked that I'm a good gamer, but not because I'm a woman, but because I don't play just one kind of game. I play all kinds. I'm very officially an okay gamer. So there you go. She's like, yeah, look at me. I'm definitely a gamer. So you're like, okay, she seems like one of the good ones. She's saying it's not because I'm female. It's not because I'm a novelty. All right, yeah, I can get on board with that. That's good. That's great. That's exactly the positive attitude. But then what happened, Sam, was apparently while she was playing an FPS game, somebody team killed her. And teabagged her. And again, for those that don't know, teabagging is when you crouch on a body to make it look like you are dunking your testicles, which, of course, don't exist in the game. You don't have testicles. You are just a sprite. If you don't explicitly have testicles out, if you're like Buster Gonad, then, yeah, you know, then you've got testicles. But if the testicles aren't there, there are no testicles. It's not like there's layers of clothing, is there? You just don't. And that was just too much for her. That was just too much. So a journalist who I think she has a relationship with, because if you go back and read many of her articles, she talks about a mic. So I don't know if they're co-workers, if it's that type of relationship, if they're dating, if that's a relationship. But she always talks about how her and Mike are playing games. So immediately this journalist, Mike Futter, came in and said this in the most kind of, you know, petulant display of white knightery I think I've seen in a while. Friendly tip for devs showcasing games: don't intentionally team kill a journalist and then teabag them, especially if she's a woman. You know, he's had a deep sip from the respect whammon cup right there, right? You know what I mean? I'm just full of respect whammon juice today. And it's like, listen, I've said this many times. This is an aside. I'm already taking a bit too long to get to the point, so we definitely won't go down this cul-de-sac. But I don't understand how you can exist in a quantum superstate where women are your equals, if not your betters, in certain areas. Like, for example, I'm sure if I went through Mike Futter or any other washed out male feminist like him, I'm sure if I went through his Twitter feed, he would have said, imagine if all the people in charge of the world were women, the world would be a much better place. I'm sure that sentiment would be in there. Or, you know, no female politician would send people to die in a war. They would resolve their problems around a table. I've seen that tweeted a lot. Hell, I respect George Carlin. George Carlin said, you know, you can tell that men run the world because look how fucking fucked up and shitty it is. Only men would do that, you know, and I respect George Carlin's views. But again, there's this, like, you exist in this quantum superstate where women are superior to men in a lot of respects, but certainly equals in every respect. But then also, you have to hold the cognitive dissonance in your mind of women being victims and weak and needing your protection. Well, these are diametrically opposed thoughts. Which one is it? I certainly lend myself more to the first one than the second, which is why I have no qualms if a woman says something I disagree with on the internet, I argue with them. If, same as if a guy says something, I don't believe they are in any way inferior to me and need to be treated differently. But yes, respect women, said Mike Futter. And of course, this is, you know, no declaration of any personal issues there. I'm just going to come out and say it. And then loads of people replied to it saying, oh, you should name and shame. And to which he said, someone has to be the adult in the room. As you'll get to in a second, you will see that this was basically blackmail for the developer, which still hasn't been found yet. Probably didn't exist. Probably literally a made-up story because the fucking conference was going so well. But look, just in there, Sam, you will see somebody called Aubrey Norris, who worked on Minecraft and is at the gaming team at Microsoft, just all for naming and shaming. Just like straight up just saying, yeah, let's just name this developer and let's have a angry mob about this innocuous happening. Now, again, just to be absolutely clear, I don't know. This kind of seems like a bit of fun. And if you get mad triggered by it, I know, like, wait to respawn, team kill them back, and then teabag them. If you need that validation, I don't know. But anyway, it gets worse, because while all this drama was brewing about how, this poor woman got fucking humiliated by a games developer, she also had to come out and admit that it was a mistake. So she says here, I hate playing these kinds of games, after she got teabagged. And then she said, now, granted, he thought I was his dev buddy by accident. So he didn't even do it to you to annoy you. He was in a game, and he obviously, the other developers worked a lot on it, and he thought he'd have a bit of fun with his developer buddy, blow off some steam. We all know how crunch works, especially ahead of expos. There's this thing called crunch in the games development industry. It's basically where you have no life.
Yeah.
You just work every hour until the game is finished. You sleep under your desk. I've talked to loads of games developers that have gone through this. And when you've got to roll out a demo of a game at an expo, you have that last minute crunch to iron out all the bugs because journalists are going to be testing it and you do not want them to see bugs. So crunch time happens not just before release dates, but before demonstration dates as well. So obviously these people will have been incredibly tired, incredibly exhausted, and wanted to blow off a bit of fucking steam. So there you go. But tried to blow off a bit of steam and fucking boom. So she then admitted it was a mistake, but that didn't stop because, again, they're all friends. It's all one big conspiracy now to make gamers look like absolute pieces of shit. Keep in mind, by the way, I don't know if you've noticed this, but if anybody thinks that they can trust games journalists, this is all you need to know, that they originally reported that anybody who used the hashtag Gamergate was a misogynist that wanted to harass women. Then they changed it to that they were all Trump supporters. Then they changed it to that they were all white nationalist neo-Nazis. Then they changed it to that Gamergate were all Russian bots. And now they're changing it that Gamergate and anybody that ever used the hashtag Gamergate or called for ethics in journalism is now an incel because we had the incel killing when a guy came out and posted it. So they can't even keep their story straight about the people they supposedly demonize. And this is how I immediately tune the fuck out of anybody. I must be one of the only journalists left in the industry. Not because they don't believe it, but I've had numerous journalists say to me going, yeah, look, I know the narrative about Gamergate is absolute bullshit, but if I come out and say that, I simply will not work at any of these publications. They just won't hire me. You know, if I tweet anything or say anything, somebody somewhere screen caps it, and they have like lists where before if a publication is even thinking about hiring someone, other journalists will go and be like, yo, you don't want to hire this person because they have bad ideas about this particular topic. They rule it. It's like a cartel now. So most journalists that know the narrative about Gamergate, which, again, was investigated by the FBI and found there was no credible threats of violence made against anyone. And, in fact, actually, we know several of the people that rose to prominence during the Gamergate era faked things against themselves. You know, there's never been any evidence to suggest that this was an organized harassment movement. Never. Simply does not exist. That evidence does not exist. And if somebody will show me the existence of that evidence, I will recant everything I've just said. But nobody is ever able to do it. And as they say, you know, that is presented without evidence can be refuted without evidence. Now, I'm not saying people didn't get harassed by online mobs. That happens to everybody. It's not, and anybody can use a hashtag. The portrayal, though, of this movement as being an organized attack on women and then a racist organization, a Russian organization. Now it's the incels. It's just embarrassing how everything comes back to it. So anybody that says, Gamergate, eh? Ethics in general. I just immediately discount you. Like you are a moron who is incapable of thinking critically. That is basically what you are dog whistling to me, to use one of your terms. You are telling me you are a moron because when you look at all the evidence, actually, we're talking about a handful of retards on the internet and a lot of smoke and mirrors. We are not talking about a coordinated effort to attack people. So anyway, yes, it's all one big conspiracy. So what do? They reach out to friendly journalists to write salacious, over-the-top pieces that make gamers look like fucking shit in public. And you can see here, this is the Metro. Man teen killed and virtually teabagged female journalist during shocking in-game rampage. Well, what is shocking about being teabagged? What is shocking about teabagging in a game? It's just not shocking at all, is it? But yes, and there were several other articles like this. Again, they all rally around. Oh, I'm sorry, honey. I'm sorry this happened to you. Like, seriously, I would definitely say maybe this isn't the line of work for you. At a time, by the way, when real journalists that do real work around the world are dying in record numbers due to, dictatorships and breakdown of international relationships and increases in terrorism, whistleblowers are being killed by corrupt governments across the world. These people think they're fit to wear the lofty title of journalist, and you're not. First of all, you're not even dedicated to telling the truth in your own very limited field. To them, it's a gateway to Z-list celebrity. They want to always be the center of attention. They want to talk about how gamers are bad and how it affects them. And shall we talk about the politics, my politics about this particular game? And this is where I'm going to go with this. They don't even keep it consistent. I think that's the worst part about it. That while you're writing about, I got teabagged in a game, what a fucking nightmare, you're also, you can't even keep what the politics are supposed to be straight. Now, do you remember we talked about Kingdom Come Deliverance, the game, on this podcast? We talked about it and the ridiculous coverage about how they tried to make it look like it was racist because it didn't tokenly include black people. Now, The reason the developers didn't do this is they wanted it to be historically accurate. And as we demonstrated in the show, even historians came and said, yeah, there just wouldn't have been a lot of black people around at that time. There's still black people. I think there's like one or two black people in the game in minor roles. But then what they did was after historians went and said, yeah, there's just no argument historically to put black people in. They came out and said, well, if you want... Wanting to adhere to that level of historical detail is in itself racist. Why wouldn't you just ignore the historical detail, which was described by some publications as a fool's errand, and just put people of color into it? But the modus operandi for the game was to be as historically accurate for the time period as possible. Languages, geography, everything. But they condemned it. And if you look at this, right, this is Vice, their Games Vertical, Waypoint. A publication that, again, full disclosure, recently tried to intimate I was a racist, because what they did was they talked about the Sadakis situation and then tried to say, yeah, well, CSGO has a lot of people like that, doesn't it? Like Richard Lewis and Thorin. When have I ever done anything close to that? Never. Okay. They do that a lot. They skirt the lines so they don't get sued. And they know now I am litigious, and I will jam up my lawyers, and I will piss all my money away to have lawyers just fucking with these people constantly every time they lie about me. So now they try and do the guilt by association by juxtaposing, you know. It's like if you segued from, yeah, Adolf Hitler did this, and you've got a lot of people in esports like that. You know, kind of like Richard Lewis and Thorin. You know what I mean? Now, all of a sudden, I'm being compared to Hitler. So anyway, they made the stance. Imagine this. Games journalists, a game that's coming out, a game that should be celebrated because it is one of the most successful Kickstarter games of all time, a game that shows there is inherent value in crowdfunding and you can make incredible works of art and incredible gaming experiences from crowdfunding. While we're all waiting for fucking Star Citizen, that's never going to come out. They delivered on time, delivered to the crunch, regular patches, regular DLC, even did an Easter-themed event. And Waypoint, that's Vice's Games Vertical, refused to cover it. They didn't want to cover the game. They didn't want to acknowledge it existed. And they talked about why on the podcast, saying that basically to summarize their arguments, and this is paraphrasing and an oversimplification, but basically to choose historical accuracy over tokenism is racist. So after weeks and weeks of why are there no black people in this game? Why are there no black people in this game? Why are there no black people in this game? Where are the black people in this game? And the constant rebuttal being, yeah, but it's historically accurate. And where are black people there? It's not racist. And look, actually, here's one. Here's a black person. Here's a black person. They now have decided, this is Vice, same publication that refused to cover Kingdom Come for not including black people. What kind of article do you think they've written, Sam? You're not even going to believe it.
Is it going to be putting talking black people in a game as racist?
Here it is. Here it is. The question, the immortal question. After refusing to cover a game for not including black people, they publish an article saying, wait, why are there so many black people in Far Cry 5? Seriously. How does this industry have any credibility? How do these publications have any credibility when you cannot even stick to the narrative you're trying to spin? If this was a government, right? And they do it all the time. They do all the gotchas. Like, you know, look, Donald Trump said this in 2012. It's 2018 now, motherfucker. Everybody, look, we did advanced search on Twitter. That's like a fucking Lexus search, by the way, to these fucking sad cunts. It is the nadir of journalism. Yes, well done. You have discovered the advanced search Twitter, advanced search function on Twitter. Yeah, that's a Pulitzer. Yeah, we brought down another person who said something contradictory years ago. Well done. You're a genius. You have, that's it, mate. Nixon's going to get impeached now. You did it. All the King's men. Well done.
Twittergate.
I made that point when I did it. I published an article on my blog where I expressly say, if you do this to anybody, you will find something that you can spin if anybody has preserved their social media history from when they were just a person to being a public person. You will always find something you can scandalize and spin. And I demonstrated that by doing it for a lot of the Gawker staff. You can check it out. It's on rlewisreports.com. But anyway, why are there so many black people in Far Cry 5? And it's just like, again, I'm not going to read the full article, so no doubt people will accuse me. Ah, you're just getting baited off the headline. But the premise of the article is that, okay, it's literally the exact opposite of what they said about Kingdom Come. So keep in mind, I just told you what Waypoint's argument was for Kingdom Come, not including black people, that to want to have historical accuracy in place of tokenism means you're racist, and you are using that as a mechanic for your own secret covert racism. That is what they were saying, that the developers were obviously racist, and they found a game in a time period in a part of the world where they could use their white supremacy and have an excuse, right? Read you the opening paragraph. After spending a few weeks with Far Cry 5, I've come to the regretful conclusion that there are way too many black people in this game. It's not that I dislike black people in fiction or in real life. Full disclosure, I am black. It's just that for a series that prides itself on realism, my experience of constantly bumping into assault rifle-toting black people in the forests of Montana seems unrealistic. Oh, hang on a minute. So what you're saying is you welcome realism in your games now. You welcome realism in your games. You consider it immersion-breaking if your games don't reflect reality. That's fucking weird, because the publication you're writing for was just arguing the exact fucking opposite. It goes on. According to a 2016 census, black people make up just over 0.5% of the population of Montana. There are only about 6,000 black people in the entire state. Does Far Cry expect me to believe that all of them moved to Hope County? Well, you know what's interesting about that 0.5% and 6,000 number? That's way fucking more than the amount of people that were living in the ancient Czech Republic, the medieval Czech Republic, that happened to be black. Same publication. I can't, Sam. It's a joke. It's a fucking... These people are mental. They're crying about being fucking teabagged. They're saying, put black people in the game. Now they're saying, there's too many. Come on. It's too much. Anyway, just to get back to the teabagging story, I actually reached out to a developer that got blamed for the teabagging situation. Because what happened off the back of that was... In the absence of them naming and shaming, somebody uploaded a video of this game called Wormhole Wars, which is made by 1047 Games. And they were like, look, this somebody was getting shot and teabagged in it. But and they said it must be these people, right? So people ran with it and started blaming 1047 Games, makers of Wormhole Wars. And it turned out the clip was actually from before PAX and was during just an in-house development game that they were playing amongst themselves, amongst the dev team, and no press involved. So the timeline was wrong and the story doesn't sync up. So they were getting railed by all of these games journalists and, you know, terminally offended people that support the game's journalists. So they reached out to Amanda and said, could you please clarify that it wasn't our game? And in fact, you didn't come to our standard, didn't play the game. And she wouldn't. She wouldn't do it. I'll read you the statement I got from the 1047 Games social media and community manager. It started when Amanda Furrow supposedly had a bad experience at PAX. She jumped on Twitter where she stated she'd been team killed and teabagged in a game. Then Mike Futter quoted her tweet and went on about how this was something bad that devs shouldn't do. He also said, by the way, good luck getting positive publicity for your game, implying we would just lie in print if your game was good because you did the bad thing. That's all you need to know right there about the industry. They'll act like just a mafia group to bankrupt your company because you teabagged one of their own. They're a joke. Someone linked a video of our game where one player gets teabagged, and people started to say it was our game that Amanda Farrow was talking about. We reached out to Amanda to ask her to clarify that it was not her game because, one, it doesn't have team killing, but it does have teabagging, and we think teabagging is fun, but it's not something we would do for someone trying it for the first time. We also pointed out that the link clip was recorded before PAX. She went off on Twitter, maybe intentionally, to try and let it seem like it was our game. No one ever found out what game she was talking about. That's what leads me to conclude that I think she just made the whole thing up, honestly. Just how could that secret stay with everybody digging into it, you know? She never claimed it was our game, but she still wouldn't clarify that it wasn't our game. Based on the negative publicity we got, we decided we wanted to put a more fun spin on all of the attention. So we made a game mode called Teabag Confirmed. Just like the classic Kill Confirmed game mode, but with a teabagging move to confirm or deny the kills. And they've got some tweets here I can link you to if you want to go and have a look and check out Wormhole Wars. And again, obviously not, this isn't promotion. I'm not being paid. I just like the cut of their jib. And they had to deal with some rough shit. So here you go. And you can see there's got video footage of the teabag mode if you want to just sort of play it in the background while I continue to read the statement they sent across. So anyway, he goes on to say, when people started asking to clear up the confusion, she refused to answer and simply blocked them. We don't hold any ill will towards Mike, who also stayed silent, or Amanda. We had fun with it instead. We believe teabagging is part of the game. And it says, if there's anything you'd like to ask, keep in touch. DM's open around the clock. So, again, they were happy to have a totally separate game that had nothing to do with this get completely fucking ruined, developers potentially losing their jobs, getting negative press and publicity, rather than just clarify. Unreal. Fuck these people.
Nice guys.
But yeah, I might even reach out to them and play Wormhole Wars a little bit on stream. Doesn't look like my type of game. I don't usually play games like that, but again, because they seem like nice guys, and they're the kind of developer that I think deserve community support. It's probably something I might do. Right, anyway, next segment, Sam. We are through. Games journalism still retarded, not fit for purpose. These people hate you. These people will lie in print. They will serve their cronies and their own interests, and they all wish they were doing something else. And the only thing they hate more than you is themselves. That's it. So, Britain. It's a shithole, isn't it, mate?
Yeah, it's not great.
to quote my boy Trump. Not a fan of Britain. We had the Dankula verdict. I'm not going to wax too much about that. For those that didn't follow what happened, basically, Dankula didn't go to jail, didn't get a custodial sentence, which is great news. I'm very happy about that. But he was found guilty. And he was given an £800 fine. Now, I saw a lot of people online going, oh, so much for the death of free speech. It is still a guilty verdict.
Still prosecuted.
Yeah, exactly. It's still a criminal conviction on his record for making a joke on YouTube. This is not anything that you should allow to happen. As it turns out, he has said he refuses to pay the £800 fine. And this is what I mean. Some people have tried to frame this as, oh, he just likes the attention. Let me tell you, somebody that spoke to Marcus, or somebody that's come on the show, as somebody that kept in touch with him throughout his trial, as somebody that helped with the initial fundraiser so he could get the money he needed to actually defend it in the first place. The easiest thing in the world for him to do now is to pay the £800 fine and get on with his life. He has still had a bunch of attention. He will still be the poster boy for the absurdity of these hate speech laws in the UK. He has still made connections with mainstream journalists and been championed by the likes of David Baddiel and Jonathan Pye. He will do fine. He will be able to go to the Edinburgh Fringe and do a speaking engagement. He will be able to go all over the world and talk about how strange it can be. He would be fine. The last thing he should want to do, after being dragged through the courts for 2 years over a fucking joke, is agree to get involved in more legal action. But he is refusing to pay the £800 fine. In fact, he tweeted out, whoops, I went to pay the fine and I got it wrong. And he gave it to a children's hospital charity. He said he now plans to not only appeal the verdict, but push back and fight against the existence of the hate speech law and try and have the Offensive Communications Act of 2003 repealed or reviewed on a government level. So he's run a GoFundMe, which, again, I know a lot of people already gave that follow my stuff, gave the first time around. So I'm not saying go and give. But if you can, again, you know me, I don't want your donations or your subs. I appreciate it. I love it when they're there. And the money definitely come in handy while I was moving house, I won't lie. So thank you to all the people who always donate and give to me. But you know me, I'll be all right. I'm not financially driven. My dick doesn't get hard over having a lot of subs or pointing to numbers. I'm not that kind of streamer. I'm not that kind of person. So if you were going to sub or donate, don't. Go and give to that GoFundMe, because even though it's already raised $158,585, it smashed its goal in a day. Pounds, sorry. Been out here too long, mate. I'm converting. I've turned. I call it soccer all the time now as well. There's no getting me back, is there? Britain wouldn't want me back. And as we're about to demonstrate, I wouldn't want to go back to Britain, actually. But yes, what's going to happen is all the money that's used for the appeal to fund the appeal will obviously come out of that. It's going to be put in escrow, so none of it will be in Marcus's direct control, which, again, some people are trying to say this is a cash-in. And any money that's left over will go to the same charity that he donated his £800 fine to. So either way, it's either he's jammed up in the courts forever and he's going to need the money because legal fees are expensive, or it goes to a children's charity. It's win-win. And keep in mind, anybody as well that says that he was doing this for money, this is a guy who wouldn't set up a GoFundMe the first time around. That's why I had to do it. Because he wouldn't have done it otherwise, and he needed the money. So anyway, you can go and support that GoFundMe if you want. It's just called Fund the Countdown Killer Appeal. But again, the fact that he was even found guilty in the first place is absurd. But not as absurd as this. Just to show that Britain is a fucking meme. It is just such a shithole, miserable country. I've talked about it before. A nation of bitter Jobsworths that can't even be corrupt properly. That sums up Britain to me. They can't even do corruption properly. It's always petty. It's like, you know, you work at a bank, but you fucking steal paper clips. You know? That's Britain in a nutshell to me.
Well, you know, steal for haters. It would be dumb enough to do that.
I just hate how many million? I hate how the local council use anti-terrorist laws to see if you're trying to sneak your kids into a school that you're not covered by the postcode. I hate the way that councils go through your garbage just to hit you with a fucking spot fine. I hate the way that we've now got undercover litter detectors, people who dress up like just regular folk, and if you miss a bin or smoke a cigarette, and they, hey, mate, what are you doing, mate? Like, all right, let's let him pick it up. What you dragging him through the courts for? Just make him pick it up, all right? Come on. We're just a nation of jobs worth. And we're losing a lot of perspective about what's important. Have you seen, for example, these police raids to get weapons? Have you seen this?
No.
Like, so British police forces, I don't have this to hand, I'm going to see if I can find it for you. They have been seizing like weapons, and they're not weapons. These weapon seizures are like garden tools. And now every police force has like an active Twitter. You'll find like just, you know, they'll tweet out going, another good day for weapon seizures. And I saw one. I can't find it now.
I've seen some of these.
It wasn't a fake. It's a real account. He was holding up a garden fork. A garden fork. Who are you? Splinter from the Turtles. You're not going to do anything with that. Come on.
They're You're seizing... licensed for that rake, mate.
Yeah. They're seizing butter knives. It's a joke, mate. And it's like, listen, I understand we've got to take knife crime seriously. The murder rates in London are horrifying right now. The knife crime rates in London are horrifying. Yes, they have to do something, but doing seizures of garden tools isn't the answer. Community policing is the answer. You know, this is what you have to be doing. It's just so stupid. Anyway, so completely absurd. Britain. But this was the most absurd thing I think I've seen in a while. To go alongside, by the way, police investigating name-calling at primary schools. That's happened a lot lately. There's been a huge increase in police going to primary schools and interviewing children over who... this is true, Google it, over name-calling. So this... should blow everyone's mind. And if you're in any doubt on Britain's stance on freedom of speech, you might laugh at Americans. You might laugh at Americans, my friends. You might do all of the things that I know a lot of British people do and go, ha ha, look at you. You're all fat and you love your guns. And yeah, look at you, look at you. This, what I'm about to show you, could never happen in America because they have the Bill of Rights. So you can fucking mock America all you want. The Bill of Rights is one of the most important legal documents in the fucking world. It is a, you know, they treat it like it is a religious doctrine, and it's for you. It's your right to preserve your liberties. You don't have that in Britain. And this is why you end up with shit like this. A woman was found guilty of a hate crime because she posted rap lyrics on Instagram. Rap lyrics posted on Instagram. This is Chelsea Russell, 19, from Liverpool, posted a lyric from Snapdog's I'm Trippin' to pay tribute to a boy who died, 13-year-old boy. And I believe it had the N-word in the lyrics. And somebody complained, and the police investigated it. And it was deemed, and again, this is why this term is so dangerous, and this is the same term that fucked over Dankula. It was deemed grossly offensive. And as a result of it being grossly offensive... somehow, grossly offensive is now the same as a hate crime. And this individual had a defense lawyer who said, how on earth can this be considered to be grossly offensive when, for example, Jay-Z had just played Glastonbury and used the word repeatedly in front of thousands of people and on television? The defense also said the profile wasn't public. And it wasn't necessarily meant for public consumption, but because anybody could see it and pass it round and take a screenshot of it, they dismissed that defense. And she was found guilty. 8-week community order, an 8-week curfew, £500 in costs, and an £85 victim surcharge for putting rap lyrics on Instagram. That's Britain. That's modern Britain, folks. And it doesn't end there, because while we're getting embroiled in Fifi policing, that, you know, people are saying rap lyrics online and the police are dedicating resources to that, and we're putting people through the courts for this. And trust me, it's finite. The resources are finite. We don't have infinite resources. There'd be no crime if that was true. So this definitely comes at a cost somewhere else. Undoubtedly. But I don't know if you're caught up with all this stuff about the fucking Windrush generation that's been going on in Britain. Now, I'm going to tell you this. A lot of people think, like, oh, Richard's a fucking, you know, he's a Trumper, he's a Republican, he's a conservative, he has a hard line on immigration. Let me tell you my stance on immigration. It's very fucking simple. I think, unfortunately, a lot has changed in recent times due to Western foreign policy. And now there are a lot of people out there that definitely don't like the West very much and want to do harm to its citizens. As a result, we need a more robust immigration policy. And unfortunately, if people are here, right, illegally, we need to contextually look at that. Now, again, this is where the problem starts to arise, because everybody seems to want blanket policies. The Democrats want just full amnesty for illegal immigrants across the board, no questions asked, even if it's been proven that, you know, perhaps these illegal immigrants have broken the law in other areas. And let us not forget, it's called illegal immigration, and the reason people want to remove the term illegal immigration, because it's breaking the law in and of itself. You are illegally in a country. Right, so people say to me, I've literally heard people say this to me, illegal immigrants haven't broke the law. How the fuck are they an illegal immigrant then? You daft cunt. Like, think about it. The clue is in the name, and that's why they want to change the language. What they mean is they haven't broken any laws since they last broke the law to get into the country. But that doesn't mean all illegal immigrants are bad. And my heart gets torn out when I see people who've lived in America for 20, 25 years illegally. But, you know, have got social security numbers somehow and tried to make a positive contribution. And then they get took away by ICE and fucking deported, and entire families get broken up over it. I don't like that. And I think there has to be a way where we say, look, we've now got better border control, but the people who were already here when we didn't have that border control and the risks weren't as crazy because we didn't have the rise of ISIS and the rise of Al-Qaeda and the rise of radical Islamic terrorism. What we need to do is we need to make those people feel comfortable coming forward into a room and tell them that we will look at what they have given in their time in the country, and if they haven't broken the law, and if they've been, you know, model citizens, maybe they can just pay some back taxes and we can fix it. Maybe we just declare an amnesty. I don't know, but it seems to me that basically declaring everyone must get out, get the fuck out, is bad. That's my immigration stance. I know it's a little bit nuanced, isn't it? Because I'm not a full lefty and I'm not a full righty. It's kind of weird how that works. Like, maybe for something as big as people's lives, you might not want to have a fucking blanket statement that at any given moment is going to put you on the wrong fucking side, depending on the individual. It's almost as if context matters to pretty much everything. But we had it in Britain, and there's this thing called the Windrush generation. For those of you who don't know, I'm sure you heard the term in the news lately. Basically, what happened was there was a boat called the MV Empire Windrush, which arrived at Tilbury Docks, there's the callback, in 1948. And it brought people from Jamaica, Trinidad, basically all the Commonwealth islands. And the reason we brought these people over, the reason we said to people in the Commonwealth, right, look, you can come to Britain and live now, is because in the post-war, there were labor shortages. We didn't have a workforce. Half of the workforce had fucking died. We needed people to come in and do jobs. And not for the first time in history, Britain went out and said, oh, yeah, we fucking love you. We love you, India. We love you, Jamaica. We love you, Commonwealth countries. We love you, Africa. Come over. Come over. Yeah, we fucking love you. Wait, what? Now we got full employment and a conservative government. These fucking foreigners taking our jobs. That's Britain. That veering of shit, we need people to do jobs. Let's go get the people whose countries we fucking took over, shall we? Come in. Yeah, now that racist shit's over. What, imperialism? Nah, never us. Come on. Don't be daft. Wait, fuck, the economy's crashing. Ah, fucking hell. I can't get a job because your government told them to come here and take that job because you didn't want that job back then. You want it now, yeah. You made a choice. That is not grounds to hate an entire race of people, is it? It's not reasonable. That's your average moron. Yeah, they took our jobs. Yeah, they took our jobs when there were jobs to take.
Because nobody wanted them.
Yeah, because no
one wanted them. Or everyone was dead.
Yeah, yeah. What do you want? So we had this thing called the Windrush generation. Now, we were so desperate to get them in. The British Home Office didn't document these people. They came in, they said, all right, you're on this boat, so you must be allowed in. Where are you from? You're from Jamaica, are you? Brilliant. Love Jamaica. We love Jamaica. In you come. Right, now, there's a factory job over there, and we need bus drivers over here, and we got there you go. And they went and did it. And we did this routinely. It wasn't just like we did one lot in 40. We did it between 1948 and 1971. That's how long it took to replenish the workforce and get people into this position of full employment, which is, as soon as it happened, you'll notice this is when all the fucking racist parties were able to stoke, you know, racial disharmony. And also in 71, we brought in a new immigration act where we said to people, if you came in as part of the Windrush generation, we're not going to bring any more in, but if you were here and you were part of the Windrush group, you can stay indefinitely. If you were part of the Commonwealth and you were in Britain, you can live in Britain indefinitely. We said that. It was committed into law. 1971 Immigration Act. But here's the thing. A lot of these people, especially the ones who came over in 48, they never got papers. They were told they didn't need papers. They didn't need passports. They didn't need documentation of any kind. And now, in this mad, demented world in Britain, where it's like they're trying to walk back Brexit, but at the same time trying to appeal to people who are so staunchly anti-immigration, they are trying to send the Windrush generation back if they do not have the proper paperwork. After it was the Home Office failure that they had paperwork in the first, didn't have paperwork in the first place. There is literally no argument here, by the way. They're here legally. They just can't prove it. And they can't prove it because if you've ever tried to get a fucking passport in Britain, they go, well, you got to have a birth certificate. Ah, I was born in Jamaica, though. Well, can you get your birth certificate? Well, no, I was born in fucking 1930. Can't. I came here as an 18-year-old man to work a job, and the hospital in Jamaica doesn't exist anymore, and they didn't keep records back then. So how am I going to do that? Well, have you ever been? I've got a got a national insurance number, but that's it. Well, no, you can't get a passport without any of those things, and we need a birth certificate to get you a passport. You know, we need doctors to vouch for who you are. It's still this mad, antiquated, convoluted system to get a British passport. So, because they can't get the paperwork, and we're not even assisting them in telling them how to get the paperwork, we are literally going to send them back. It is demented. Again, legal citizens of Britain being sent back to countries that they haven't been to many people since they were a child because of a paperwork snafu. So that's the Windrush stuff in a nutshell. Let me just show you this sort of human cost, all right, and how ridiculous it's got. There was this story here, and by no means is this a one-off. This was a story about Sunita Bristol as the mother. Of Dexter Bristol. Now, Dexter Bristol was a 57-year-old man who had come to the UK when he was 8 years old in 1968, part of the Windrush generation, totally legal, part of the Commonwealth. He was living in the UK, and he worked as a cleaner, and he got fired. And he got fired, and because he never had to have a passport, he went to the job centre, like you do when you get fired, and he said, can I get benefits? And they said, do you have a passport? And he went, well, no. And they said, well, how can you prove you're here legally? And he went, well, I came over here, 68, these are the admission papers. And he went, yeah, but you need some form of ID, you need your papers. So he tried to get in touch with the immigration office and the Home Office. And he was like, can you just acknowledge that I'm not an illegal immigrant so I can get my benefits? And there had been no problem. He'd been working. He'd been paying his taxes. He'd been making his national insurance contributions. Nobody at any point while he was in gainful employment and paying taxes had any issue. But then the Home Office were like, well, we didn't take paperwork at that time. And he's going, yeah, but there's got to be a record somewhere. I came in. So they started digging into it and proved that he wasn't an overstayer, that he hadn't come over on like a temporary visa or something. And he was unemployed this entire time, couldn't get benefits, and he just keeled over and died at home. Cause of death unknown. I think he might have been a little bit fucking stressed out, don't you?
Yeah, probably.
Then after living in Britain completely legally from 8 years old and working a job, suddenly finds himself unemployed without benefits, slipping through the cracks of a fucking broken system, and nobody is going to help him because the Home Office doesn't even know what the fuck they are doing. Dead, gone, 57, boom. A model citizen. Madness. And then, on top of that, just in case you thought it couldn't get more absurd, for the people that aren't in these types of situations, but are being told that because you can't prove that you're a legal British citizen, we're going to send you back to Jamaica. You know what the Home Office did? At a time when they were going, why are we getting sent back? Why are we being, we are British citizens now. We live in Britain. We're British. Why are you sending us back to Jamaica? The Home Office, the same Home Office that can't get them the documents they need to stay, issued a guide. And it tells them, and this was a guide that has been kept for years, apparently. No one's noticed it until now. Because now they're handing it out to people en masse because of this absurd conservative situation. They tell these people, when you go back to Jamaica, just try and be Jamaican and adopt a local accent when you get there. Can you believe it? Some do's and don'ts. Here you go. I'll read you this, guys. Some do's and don'ts. The following list of do's and don'ts has been compiled by the NODM to help returning residents settle safely back into life in Jamaica. Do, travel where possible in the day. Because, by the way, I don't know if people notice, Jamaica's, it's a place with a lot of history, heritage. It's also got a lot of fucking crime.
Yeah.
Travel where possible in the day. If you are going somewhere unfamiliar, ask someone to meet you on arrival. This is where they've got to live, Sam. This is like what you say to tourists.
Yeah.
Going into like the city of God in Brazil. Call NODM if you are uncertain about travel in an unfamiliar area. Keep your cash and personal items hidden from view. Try to be Jamaican. Use local accents and dialect. What if you don't know what a local...
Exactly, I'm British. What the fuck do you mean? Never been, like, have I?
That's like you rocking up in Jamaica. Sorry, Sam, just put the accent on. Jamaica's got a bobsled team.
I'm John Candy back from the dead. You all love me, don't you?
Try to find lodgings in areas that are considered safe. Don't walk around after dark in your new home. Don't ask strangers to help you reform remittance services. Don't discuss your personal situation with people you are not familiar with. Don't allow strangers to know your destination. And don't accept lifts or befriend people you don't know. Welcome home!
No socializing whatsoever. You'll be living alone from now until the end of time. Because you cannot befriend people you do not know.
Welcome home. Welcome home. This is what we're sending them back to. By the way, the same fucking document has the audacity to say deportation is not a punishment. Now, a little bit of a silver lining, but probably not when you think about it. But maybe. The Interior Minister... Amanda Rudd, I think, is her name. Yeah, Amber Rudd, sorry, my bad. Has had to resign. But she had to resign because while they were talking about what she had an official committee, and they were asking her, what is going on with this Windrush generation? Like, why are we deporting all of these people? And she was like, oh, but I don't know, and certainly we're just looking at things. You know, all the mealy-mouthed politician stuff. But there was a document that came out which basically showed that they were actually – they had these targets. They literally had targets that they had to hit, like deportation targets. And she said she wasn't aware of that, and she's resigned, saying I misled Parliament by mistake.
Then an email came out showing that she did know about it.
Yeah, she didn't willingly mislead people. Is the defense? But again, I forget all that. Forget the fact that she's gone. This. They're taught, right? Is no one else bothered by this part? It's not the fact she lied about, yeah, that's bad. Why do we have targets for these
goals? Yeah.
Yeah. Why are we? Surely this is as close to a black and white situation as you can get. You either should be here, right? And in which case, sorry for bothering you. We will do everything we can to get you the proper documentation. Even if we have to spend money on a task force to resolve this crisis, this is the right language, right? Or you actually don't belong here, and now we're going to review your situation contextually and see whether or not we're going to give you amnesty, whether or not we are going to deport you. And these two distinct groups of people are exactly what the Home Office is for. Targets. You can't just say, oh, we've barely deported anyone this year. Let's round up the Windrush folk, shall we? What is that?
How many we had? Then 300. I know we can get them. Windrush cunts, get me a couple of those in.
And again, this is what I mean. Whenever you want to say, oh, Rich, why have you gone all American? Why do you love America so much? Because this, like, whatever you say about Trump's dystopian nightmare and bullshit, American citizens would never get deported to countries that they had come from originally. It wouldn't happen. You are protected. As soon as you get your citizenship, you are... Do you know what I mean? And, like, people were going mental about Trump's, like, temporary travel ban while we try and get our immigration policy in order. There was outrage about that, saying it was a Muslim ban and it was racist. And celebrities who were not in any way affected by the ban, like Mo Farah, were coming out making a song and dance about it. People were outraged about that. Where is the world outrage about this? This is the British government fucking over its own citizens, forcing them into just a life of misery, jamming them up with meetings and uncertainty about their future, threatening them with deportation when they're here legally, and they're doing it to hit a fucking target they pretend they never came up with in the first place. Britain. Modern Britain. Right. We'll end the show. Fuck Britain. Can't wait. Green card me. ladies and gentlemen. And then citizenship. Oh yes, oh yes. Britain, nah, no thanks. I know what's happening. I see the writing on the wall. It's done. But look, I said I was going to end the story with another sad pet story. So here it is. I hope you're ready. Sam, I think this one's going to upset you in particular.
I am. Hit me with it.
So, I mean, I just couldn't believe it when I saw the news. But one of the oldest types of animal has died in a particularly rough and violent fashion. So the world's oldest spider has died, aged 43. And it was a horrible death, Sam. It was a violent death. It died after being stung by a wasp.
Nah, I ain't going to feel bad for no spider, by the way. You chose the wrong animal.
Right. That is kind of the joke. that is the whole bit, Sam. Don't give the game away. But you know, 43 years old, the oldest spider before it, the next one in line, is only 28. 43. The spider, known fondly as number 16, have been studied by researchers since 1974. But somehow, a wasp got into its home, and in a violent tussle, it got stung, and the spider didn't survive. So, rest in peace, number 16. Just really sad. By the way, no contest. If you have to give me a choice between spiders or wasps, like, spiders every time. Fuck wasps.
I don't know, mate. Because the thing is, a wasp will sting you, but you won't die, will you? It depends what kind of spider we're talking about here. Household spiders, sure, not us. Tarantulas, right, get out of my motherfucking grill.
I'm amazed here, by the way, that more and more of these writers, when we live in an age where, you know, people see Nazis everywhere, everyone's a Nazi, like for having just even, you know, mild opinions, everyone's a Nazi. Why has no one made the leap that wasps are just the Nazis of nature? Think about it. Think about what wasps do, right? To keep to themselves, they don't like anyone else. In fact, if you've ever seen what a wasp will do to a beehive, which I have, because I obviously used to be a beekeeper, right? Bees, right, will try and live with whatever moves in. That's how we had the spread of the Varroa mite. The moths move in, and the bees are like, oh, well, yep, that giant moth is eating all our babies, but we'll try and make it work. We'll try and make it work. Oh, wait, we've all got mites on us and it's killing us and we're going to become extinct soon. Ah, we tried. The bees will try and they try with wasps. Wasps move in. They're just like, fuck these fucking bees. Get out. Get out. Get back to your own fucking... It's our hive. It's our space. Fuck you. Fuck you, bees. We want wasp purity all up in here. Fuck you, bees. And they kill the bees and then they're like, yeah, wasps. All about the what happens when you're having a picnic? Look at that, eh? Huh? Family of humans, filthy humans enjoying themselves. Let's go over and fuck with them, yeah? Let's get it all in. Oh, is that a cake? Is it? Gonna hide in a beer can, sting you on your lip. Yeah? That's Nazi talk, Sam. Wasps. Nature's Nazis. Fuck them. Punch them. Fuck them. Spiders way better.
I don't trust snakes or spiders, mate. As a general rule, as a human. And I don't trust anyone who thinks they're fucking cool either, because I reckon there's something wrong with it. Even the Bible told you snakes are evil, mate. You need to avoid them. If the Bible's telling you, that's one piece of advice you can definitely follow. Never trust snakes.
Right. I'm just put it this way, right? Listen. You've got to understand, yes, spiders are varied, right? They definitely are. But look at this. How can you get mad at this? Right? There's no equivalent of this in the world of wasps. in the world of the neo-Nazi wasp. There's no equivalent to this. Look at that.
Mate, that, you're just assuming it's nice because it's got pretty colours. I bet that shit wants to kill your life.
Mate, it's a furry jumping spider. They make great pets.
Fucking creepy people, mate. Anyone who's got a jumping spider, fuck off.
Mate, it doesn't do anything to you. You
fucking leap through the sky, you know, with those creepy little fangs, bud, doing creep balls in the fucking cage.
Look at this one. Look at this. This is the vegetarian. Oh, this is a vegetarian spider. It's vegetarian. Mate, it's vegetarian.
Give a fuck, still kill it. See, I'm my house. I'll stomp that out one time. No way is I living in my house, bud.
Mate, what? Not even the vegetarian? Oh, look at it.
Look at it. Exactly. It's fucking pure evil, mate.
You're taking the wasp side.
No, I'd kill a wasp as well, but fuck spiders to the end of time and all.
Try and find me. Like, I'm going to type it in. Cute wasp. Like, cute wasp. They just don't exist, mate. Look at this.
Who cares if they got... Why have they got to be cute to be cool?
All right, just likeable wasp. Likeable wasp. There you go. Yeah. Nothing found.
Wasp. Yeah, right. Nothing found.
Friendly wasp, then, right? There you go. Friendly wasp.
Oh, mate, we don't know this. Loads of cute wasps, yeah?
What do you mean? They're cartoons, you daft cunt!
No, this one's real.
Let's have a look.
Oh, wait, maybe. Yeah, that's real.
Is it real? What is cute about that, mate?
Yeah, common UK wasp. Mate, it's the same. It looks the same as the creepy spider you'd be linking.
No way.
It's exactly the same.
Right, friendly wasps. There isn't a species of friendly wasp. Look, it even says here. You can identify the common UK wasp by its copy of Mein Kampf.
That he flies around with.
Come on, mate.
It's like a fucking little erotic humanoid wasp, yeah? I don't know what this is about. It's called humanoid female erotic wasp. Keep that one. Oh, there's a buff man wasp, mate.
A buff man ting.
Buff man ting. Got 12 abs, this cunt. Yeah, they're both evil, mate. Fuck spiders, fuck wasps.
You're out of control, mate. Spiders just want to make the world a better place.
Yeah, by fucking sinking their deep claws and fangs in it, mate. I don't care if he's a vegetarian or not. I've seen animals lie before, mate.
They're idealists. That's all. You fucking... this might kill the podcast now that I know you're a fucking neo-Nazi wasp supporter.
I don't even like wasps. I said fuck wasps, but also fuck spiders till the end.
I think you're with the alt-wasps, mate.
Alt-wasps?
Yeah, you're with the alt-wasps.
The buzz, right.
Yeah, you're not all the way a wasp, but you think the wasps have some good ideas. Just some. That's all. Why shouldn't the wasps have their own space? Just for
what
wasps.
your
idea is not mine. I've said it. Fuck wasps. Mm. Anyway, someone just typed in the chat, Buzz Shapiro. That's unacceptable, isn't it? Anyway. Right, so time to end the show. I just wanted to end. Can we bring up one last picture of number
16? Number
16. There she is. You missed the caption underneath. Number 16 in happier times. Yeah, not dead. Yeah. Right. Anything is a happier time than being dead, isn't it? In happier times. So there you go. That's what we're going to end on. We'll just end with the image of number 16, another pet that got a bum deal because people didn't look after them properly. It's just unacceptable. So, yeah, Toby, number 16, birds of a feather. That was the Richard Lewis Show. We'll see you on the next one. Bye.